I'm Dan Burrows, and I'm going to be talking about my research in the identification of distributed coordinated network attacks. Before I get started, they asked me to make a couple announcements just about the speakers that are coming up next. There's Dr. Ian Goldberg, who's going to be talking about arranging anonymous rendezvous immediately after this speak, and then Jay Beal a bit later on talking about attacking and securing Red Hat Linux and evaluating the effectiveness of Bastille Linux. And the other thing they told me to mention was that it's really, really hot in here, so you could do yourself some good to keep drinking plenty of water or whatever your beverage of choice is. Oh, that's... they're working on the other screen. So, I'm a graduate student at Dartmouth College, and I work as a research engineer at the Institute for Security Technology Studies that's housed up there. Okay, just a brief overview of what my talk is going to be about. I'm going to start off, give you a bit of background on what ISTS is and what we're doing there. A overview of what we're trying to accomplish with this distributed intrusion detection analysis, and then getting into a bit of the details about the basics of information warfare theory that we're applying to this, Bayesian multiple hypothesis tracking, how these two things apply to intrusion detection, and then time permitting, see how we're doing for time. Going to talk a little bit about other research projects that are going on at ISTS. So I'm basically going to give kind of a high-level overview of what's going on with our system, and since it's kind of a short amount of time, not get into the real gory details of everything. So a bit about ISTS. It's a counterterrorism research institute that was started up about, it's been about a year and a half that we've been up and running now. It's or at least parts of it are housed at Dartmouth College. The three main sections are the cybersecurity division, infrastructure protection, which is the area that I work in, and chemical biological threats work being done over at the medical school at the college. We're funded mainly through the National Institute for Justice, which is the research arm of the Department of Justice. That's not our sole source of funding, but they're the ones who set up the institute and got things going. So the current research at ISTS, there's, of course, the distributed intrusion analysis, which is the area that I'm working in. Quantitative security risk analysis, which is a formalization of methods that are methods of evaluating the risk and cost-benefit factors of a network, figuring out how to best allocate your resources and how to best allocate your money in improving your network, and for evaluating the security of a network for purposes such as insurance and other issues like that. The forensic tool development, which one of the interesting things at ISTS, when you approach security there, since we're funded by the Department of Justice, security isn't really their main goal. They're the law enforcement division of the government, so they're interested more in gathering evidence, gathering information to be used basically to catch and to prosecute people, as opposed to securing things to keep people out of it. So the forensic tool development is work that's being done in how to deal with once information has been seized, either hard drives, computers, how to go through and do analysis on the files, file reconstruction from partially deleted files, and areas such as that. Semantic hacking, which is as opposed to like breaking in and just defacing a website, where someone will get onto some site, usually news, like a news site, maybe information about companies or stock prices, and alter the information in order to manipulate it for some sort of financial gain. That's one of the projects. The kind of general internet health monitoring, being able to easily and rapidly tell where there are problem areas starting on the internet, where segments of it might be going down or might be experiencing strange or unusual amounts of traffic. The security informant, which is a security news service and kind of monitoring service, not limited just to computer security, but just general security issues. And finally, the User Mode Linux HoneyNet project, which for any of you who might have been at the Black Hat presentations a few days ago, I believe Lance Spitzner talked about it. I wasn't there, but I think he talked a bit about the HoneyNet project, which is a series of computers that are being distributed to networks all over the country that are basically there just to be hacked into so people can, so we can get a look at what people are doing, what they do when they get into the systems, and have a way of looking at the people attacking our systems. User Mode Linux is a tool, it's similar to VMware, where it allows you to, within one Linux box, you can run many instances of Linux within it. And it does this by intercepting kernel calls and redirecting them. And from the outside, it can appear as if an entire network is running inside of one box, each having its own IP address, having different functionality. It was originally developed as a development tool and testing tool, but it's now being kind of turned over and being used for this HoneyNet project. So, on with the distributed IDS analysis. The objective of this is to identify related intrusions and attempts at intrusion across many networks and identify coordinated attack efforts. Whether this is one person or one group that is going out and using similar methods to attack many different networks, or whether it's a number of people or at least a number of different sources that are all attacking a particular site or a particular set of sites for some purpose, to try and pull these out of intrusion detection system reports that are being generated across many networks and figure out a kind of a higher level situational awareness of what's really going on and what the goals of the attackers are. And this is being done through the use of distributed intrusion detection systems and the application of information warfare theory and multiple target tracking algorithms. So, what is the need for this? Like I said before, that ISDS, it's a counterterrorism research institute, and one in the area that I work in is an infrastructure protection group. And this is a it's basically a research center that's been designed to develop technology to aid groups such as the NIPC and other infrastructure protection groups, to the ones that are concerned about coordinated attacks against infrastructure systems, such as whether they be communication systems, power generation systems, things, the internet itself, things such as that, and possible either attacks against a particular segment of infrastructure on a wide area or attacks against multiple segments of infrastructure within a limited geographic area. And the other area that this is being applied to is in the early detection of distributed denial of service attacks. This, as I'm sure everybody knows, that the process to setting up a distributed denial of service attack is a long process with a slow buildup that usually goes fairly undetected, or at least the people who detect it are usually protected by it and they're happy and don't get broken into while others do. And eventually, all the machines that are captured, all the zombie machines, are used to attack some victim who potentially has not seen any warning of this attack beforehand. So we're hoping to be able to do some early detection of what someone is doing when they're going out and going out and attempting to collect the zombies in a preparation for a DDoS. Okay, this system, basically what we're doing, we're looking at data that's already being collected out there by intrusion detection systems. We're not interested in developing its new IDS or new ways of collecting data, but use the existing structures that are out there, the existing systems, and to gather this data and look at it in a new way to develop a higher level awareness of this. And we're doing this through sensor data fusion. Correlating data that being gathered from the IDS over in various ways over time and space in order to develop a higher situational awareness of what's happening. It's not an intrusion detection system in and of itself. It's using the information being provided by the IDS, and using the IDS as kind of a first level filter on what's happening, where the IDS looks at your network traffic or things that are happening on a host computer and filters this information down into the various reports about what it thinks are happening. We're interested in taking those reports and figuring out what the next level bigger picture is happening from these reports. In a way, it's the same job that what a lot of security admins or security analysts are doing, and this is not an attempt to replace them with this, but just to give them another tool to have a better picture of what's going on. So this is kind of the typical view of like on a network when you have a few different attackers coming in and attacking you, that you have your network and that's kind of what you're concerned about protecting. And when someone is doing some form of distributed attack, you see the portion of the attack that coincides with your network space, and you don't see the rest of the attack. You just see what you're concerned with, basically. And this approach, it's a defensive approach, but it makes sense. That this is kind of like, this is what computer security is all about: is fortifying the defenses, building the moat around the castle, putting up the big walls, and keeping people out. But one of the things that's happening here is we're actually getting a lot of information is being gathered at this point, and it's not being used as effectively as it could be. It's being used to keep people out of individual networks, but not to understand really what the people are doing and what their goals might be. So we're trying to move to more of an attacker-centered view, to where by looking at the information being gathered off of many networks, we first gather the data gather what portions of the attacks you see from all these networks, and then it kind of comes in as like a big chunk of data, and then break this back apart in order to figure out what parts of this belong to each individual attacker or group of attackers, so we can get a better picture of what the attackers are doing as opposed to the picture of what is happening to our network. So the equations that were shown, I'm just kind of skipping over them briefly, were just a formalization of showing what information could be gathered out of the system, and they represent the best possible case. There are obviously limiting factors in that we, on any network, we don't see all it's rare that we'd ever see all the activity on it. A lot of intrusion detection systems are looking at things that are coming in and out across your perimeter, or in and out of certain segments of the network, but you know, oftentimes there's a lot of communication and traffic that is entirely within your network that you're not looking at because you're not too worried about it. So you're never going to see everything. And the other thing is that the sensors, the IDS systems, and any other type of network sensor, whether it be anything that's gathering information about what people are doing, firewalls, routers, et cetera. They're not perfect, and they miss things. They make false reports. They have false positives. So the previous view was kind of idealistic, and it's not really exactly what you're going to see. So as I said before, it's kind of a two-step process where first we bring together all the data from many from across many networks, and then we break it apart. Based on, instead of breaking it apart, it comes in on a network by network basis, and then we break it apart, hopefully down to an attacker by attacker basis. So in the first stage, there's a number of groups that are working on collecting data from many intrusion detection systems, groups like MyNet Watchman, DShield, and Incidents.org. Incidents.org actually collects information from these two and others. And they've been doing some preliminary work, some sort of basic analysis of what's going on. You can go there and see, like, what over the past month has been the most attacked port, where what IP address has been the source of most attacks, things like that. Which is, it's useful information, but it's kind of the first stage approach to this. It starts to give you a bit of an idea of what's going on out there on the networks. Okay, on with a bit about information warfare theory. Whoops. Or a mistake. Hang on a sec. The key factor in information warfare is the OODA loop that was developed by Colonel John Boyd. These four stages, observe, orient, decide, and act, are kind of, in military terms, are the overarching method of evaluating or of conducting information warfare. And really, it's something that's pretty obvious. It's pretty much how any sort of attack or response or, you know, even game sort of situation would be played out. It's just, again, it's just a formalization of things that people do all the time. The first stage is to observe, where you collect data, you collect information, whether this is coming from automated collection sources or from humans giving reports, any sort of sensor data input. And then the orient stage is where we take all of this information that we're gathering and try to make sense out of it. We try to figure out what does it mean? What is it telling us is going on? Based on that, we make decisions about what we're going to do next, and we evaluate these decisions. You know, this is kind of like the the playing chess, where you think a few moves ahead. You say that, like, this is what I think they're doing. You know, if I take this response to it, how are they going to react to it? What's likely to be the outcome? Evaluate different decision possibilities, and then eventually act upon this and implement it. So the sort of automated OODA loop, and I say mostly automated because there's always room for human judgment to be put in on this, because we don't trust machines and algorithms that much. The loop around the outer edge, if you can see the mouse pointer, kind of this loop is the main OODA loop, where we're sensing information, and then this goes through some sort of data fusion system to do the detection and situational awareness development. It moves into a planning stage, the deciding stage, and then some sort of automated response is initiated, and this is fed back through a feedback mechanism to possibly alter the sensing mechanisms to tell them to look at different areas, gather different data, do different analysis, and the loop continues around. In order to update the process so that it's not a static process, there are things going on such as data mining, where we're looking for new patterns in the information to try and identify previously unknown methods or behaviors of attack. And also visualization that is fed into that is taken out of the system to be given to humans, to the analysts, so that they can make their judgment about the behavior of the system, and kind of be there. It's like the check and balance, and to adjust how the control back mechanism works to improve the system. So the orient stage is often the weakest part of this loop. A lot of technology concentrates on the observe stage, the sensors. And this is both true of offensive and defensive technologies. It's kind of like, back like to military terms, it's kind of like, it's your radar systems. It's the trying to detect things, you know, versus like your stealth fighters trying to avoid detection. Same thing about the intrusion detection systems on your network and the people that are trying to find new ways around them and avoid being detected by them. There's a lot of concentration on that. And as far as the decide stage goes, at least in our case of dealing with intrusion detection and computer security, it's often fairly trivial to making the decision. Once you know what someone's trying to do, it's usually pretty easy to shut them down and stop them from accomplishing their goals. And the act stage is, again, merely the implementation of the decide stage. It's fairly easy to do once the decision has been made, but it can be disastrous if a poor decision has been made. And the decisions, of course, relate right back to the orientation. So I think I'm just going to skip over this. No, wrong one. The knowledge development that takes place in the orient stage, we break down into a few more categories. Data refinement doesn't, this is kind of in the traditional information warfare, but it doesn't really apply here. This is kind of removing systemic noise out of the sensors. Object refinement is where we take the information that is being gathered and break it down into correlated events to say that these sensor readings are related to the same object. And then once we have it broken down into objects, we then look at the patterns of motion, so to speak, of these objects and how they're behaving as a group, which is a situational refinement. And once you get to that stage, then you figure out why are they doing this, and what's the meaning behind this? What are they trying to accomplish? And finally, the process refinement is actually adjusting the information gathering and data fusion process to have the feedback. Yes. The question was, is the orient the most difficult part of the loop because it's the hardest, or that we don't know much about it, or whatever? And it's actually a bit about all of that. It's certainly, I think, the hardest, because a lot of it involves not just dealing with the programs that you're writing or the systems that you're developing, like the IDS, but you have to know a bit about how people are going to behave and how different attacks are going to behave. So I think it's certainly the most complicated, and it's the one that the least amount of work has been done in. So one of what we're using in this orient stage to try and figure out what the related events are is a method called Bayesian multiple hypothesis tracking, which comes out of classical radar tracking theory. In this, we have the components that you have are your environment that this is taking place within, the sensors that are out there that are taking measurements on the environment, and the targets that are moving through your system. The environment, like I said, it's your state space. It also places constraints on the motion of the objects within it. The sensors are the ones that take a measurement of the environment, whether it's position or, in our case, reports about coming off the intrusion detection systems about a particular attack being used at a particular area at a time. And the targets are what you're trying to attack, and the knowledge we have to develop about them are behavioral models. So this is just kind of like an example out of more to the classical tracking theory, like in a radar tracking. If we have some sort of targets that are moving in a two-dimensional space, and this could be like X, Y, if latitude, longitude, if it's something in the physical world, or it could be any two dimensions that we're analyzing. Where in this graph, these blips on the radar, so to speak, come in pairs, where you'd have this one and this one at one sweep of the radar, and then this one and this one come in later in the future. And we're trying to make sense out of what's going on here. What do we see happening over time? And in the hypothesis generation step of the Bayesian multiple hypothesis tracking, we build all possible hypotheses of what is happening. And these show two different possible tracks. These both say that we've got two targets out there, and they could be two targets that are moving, that kind of come in and move apart from each other in the top one, or cross over each other in the bottom one. And we build these tracks, sets of tracks that are hypotheses that show all the possibilities of what is going on out there. And then these are then evaluated for how likely each one is. In this view, each of the scans occurs at a different time, and the little circles and dots inside each scan are the readings that we're getting. And this is showing three scans with one possible hypothesis, where we're showing how target one was seen. We assume that these three things are related to target one. They're seen in all three scans. Target two is seen only in the first two. Target three is seen in the first and third, and so on. There's some false alarms in there. and other things like that going on. And we construct all, again, this is where we construct all possible ones of these. Well, in the brute force method, there are some optimizations to get away from having to do that, to make it more computationally feasible. And then we evaluate each of these hypotheses. So in the evaluation procedure, there are two stages. One is the likelihood of the system state generating the reports that you're seeing by your IDS, and the other is the probability of the target actually moving from one state to another. The future scans that come in will, so we build a what our belief is in every hypothesis, and as more information comes into the system, the belief in a particular hypothesis is either strengthened or weakened until eventually in a convergent system, one or a set of a few hypotheses will emerge as the most likely candidates for what's going on in the real world. So the likelihood evaluation is a critical part of this, and this is the Bayesian approach to probability, where the forward behavior of the sensor is well understood, meaning that if you give me a real world event, I can tell you what my intrusion detection system is going to, how it's going to respond to that. That if you see this particular set of packets coming in, we know that this IDS is going to trigger a flag and say it's this sort of attack. What you don't know, and what the problem with a lot of IDSs are, is knowing backwards, because this isn't, you don't know what attack is coming in ahead of, you don't know what the attack is. You see the report and you're trying to figure out what caused it, and we don't know whether, while we know a particular attack will trigger the IDS, if the IDS is triggered, we don't necessarily know it was specifically that attack. This could be some sort of, this could be a false positive reading. Yes? The question was, do we have profiles of certain types of attacks? And this is one of the areas of research. This is one of the things that we are trying to build up, is a sort of a database. It's similar to existing vulnerability databases that are out there, but tying in particular profiles of what the attacks look like and what the behavior does look like. And, yeah, that's a critical part to this. So this equation is the basis of this sort of likelihood tracking, where over on the left, this is showing the probability of the system existing in state S at a certain time. And it's based on the likelihood of the sensors giving you the readings that you're seeing if we truly are in this state, and the P minus is the likelihood of the target having moved from its previous state in the hypothesis to its current state. So the key feature to this this sort of analysis is it breaks apart the target's motion and separates it from the sensor's behavior, so we can model each of those independently and then bring them together through this tracking method to try and figure out the likelihood of a particular hypothesis being the actual real-world events. Just skip over all the equations. So one of the big problems with this sort of method is it requires a lot of computation, a lot of effort to do this. There's a lot of information coming in. Building all the possible hypotheses is very computationally expensive, but there's ways of kind of reducing this. One is depending on what type of sensors we have out there, whether sensors fall into two kind of general categories, whether they're complementary or competitive, meaning whether you have two sensors that are looking at different areas or different aspects of it, to where they never disagree with each other, but they're looking at different areas of your network, or like, you know, an IDS on one network and the same IDS over on another network are complementary, as opposed to two different types of IDS on the same network are competitive, because they might disagree with each other, and then you have to take the further step of trying to figure out which one of those you believe, or some way of combining that information. The target, the behavioral models of the targets are, we are trying to model them with Markov processes, which allows for independence from past states. It means that the probability of the target moving to any future state is based only on its current state, not based on its past history. And while that seems to be a that doesn't seem to quite make sense when you first hear it like that, there are methods of building Markovian processes that fairly well describe a lot of attacks in this method. The Bayes theorem has a recursive nature to it, to where every stage, as more information comes in, we don't have to go back to the beginning and recalculate everything from the start. It can be added in one stage at a time. It's kind of like it's similar to how if you're doing factorials, if you know what 5 factorial is, calculating 6 factorial only takes one more step. It's a similar process with this. And one of the keys to complexity reduction is using hypothesis pruning techniques, where we're going to figure out from one stage to the next which hypotheses are we going to progress forward, which ones are we going to get rid of, and there's a number of methods for doing this, whether you keep like just your top few of them or do some sort of thing that's similar to the way genetic algorithms work, where we keep a certain population and sort of add some randomness to it to make sure that we haven't sort of approached a local minima and are truly looking for the global correct solution. And also minimizing the dimensionality of the state space, how many variables we're looking at coming off of the IDS. So the next trick is applying this to distributed intrusion detection systems. Intrusion detection systems fall into kind of 4 basic categories based on their particular method, whether it's a signature-based type system or a statistical anomaly detection system, and their placement, whether it's a host-based system or network-based system, will affect, of course, what it's going to see and the view of the network it's going to have. For our purposes, we model these as our sensors, where the statistical anomaly systems, they have a very high false positive rate. They have a lower miss rate, particularly for new unknown attacks, because they're not concentrating on known patterns, but rather looking for unusual events happening on your network with the assumption that most bad things are going to look unusual. Signature detection systems have a high miss rate for unknown attacks. In fact, if they don't know about the attack, don't have a signature for it, they're not going to see it. And but they have a considerably lower false positive rate than the statistical anomaly systems. And then, of course, host-based see the activity occurring on a single host, and network-based sees your traffic on that particular section of your network. We also need a communication framework to gather data from these systems and to make it to allow it to be interoperable with each other, with the system as a whole. There are 3 requirements for this sort of communication system. One is configuration interoperability, meaning that they just have to be able to talk to each other. The semantic interoperability, meaning that they can parse each other's data. And finally, the hardest, the intercomprehension, meaning that they agree on the meaning and definition of the data descriptors, that when something says this is item type A, that everybody else knows what item type A means. There's some work. There's some work being done in these areas. One of these is kind of out of date and is I'm not sure how effective the CIDF is, the Common Intrusion Detection Framework, and the IDEF is the Intrusion Detection Exchange Format, a couple methods for communication in a common language for intrusion detection systems. When we apply the multiple hypothesis tracking to intrusion detection, we have our components. Our sensors are the IDS, the honeypot systems out there, human inputs, anything else that's gathering information out about what's happening on various networks. The targets, of course, are the attackers that we're trying to monitor and figure out what they're doing. And the state space The state is basically our description of the current state of the attacker or the attack, what is going on. And environmental knowledge that such as, you know, what like either the structure of your network or other things that may limit or influence the behavior and decisions made by the attacker. As opposed to traditional tracking systems, IDS sensors are a little unusual in that their measurements, when they make them, are highly accurate. They might be they may be correct or incorrect, but they don't have the sort of the variableness of like a radar sensor that tells you something's in this general area. An IDS will tell you this is what I'm seeing, and it might be absolutely wrong about what it sees, but it will tell you a very definite answer. They also have a considerably higher false positive rate, particularly with the anomaly detection systems. So it's important to know how we describe an attack, and this gets back to sort of like the modeling of the various types of attacks and building the sort of database of what these attacks are going to look like. There's sort of the raw information that we see, the usual stuff like the time, the IP address, the ports, things like that. But kind of what's important to us is a bit more of a descriptive, abstracted information about the attack, things that would give us a bit of insight into why someone or a particular attack might be using this, whether they're just going for the easy, quick attacks, whether they're doing things in a slow, stealthy, calculated way, whether it looks like they've done reconnaissance ahead of time and know a bit about our about the network and other things like that. These abstractions must be very accurate because otherwise the system will fall apart. If the abstractions are incorrect, you're going to make incorrect assumptions about what's happening. And this is where we're using what I mentioned a little bit ago about the vulnerabilities database to gather some of this information and build a sort of history of the models of these attacks. And again, the While that's kind of the key to the system, the raw data also is, of course, very useful information to keep as well. So the vulnerabilities database, this is similar to other things that are out there like the ICAT metabase and the various things like the CERT and CVEs and all of that, bug track. And we're actually, it ties into those and gets its information from those, but it's designed such that it's extensible with other information that we want to add in about the particular exploits and vulnerabilities so that we can build up these sort of more descriptive definitions of what's happening. I guess there's not too much more to say about that. It's kind of like just our own. We were eventually planning on kind of releasing this to allow public access to it, but right now it's still kind of our own private research tool. Just real briefly about modeling the attacker behavior. The attacker's behavior is dependent on their goals, whether they're trying to do the DDoS preparation where they're going out gathering zombies, or that they're going after a particular single target. And I decided to make this current because I just heard yesterday that sans.org got hit yesterday morning. So that's obviously what someone was after then. I believe I heard that Fluffy Bunny gets credit for that. So again, it's desirable to use Markovian models to model the attacker behavior. And it's possible that a particular attacker might be exhibiting multiple behaviors, depending on what they're trying to do, or that the behaviors can be described as basic components that can be combined into, you know, the whole theory of starting off with your simple basic components that you combine in complex ways, rather than designing things that are complex from the start. So, as a simplified version of like a behavioral model, if we just look at two components, two dimensions, whether it's the attack method and the sort of the IP address space, that if you could imagine if these two things weren't colored differently and you just saw like this sort of like blob of information coming in, that one of the hypotheses you could generate is that these were actually two different things going on here. There was one particular attack that's concentrating on a particular system, on a local area, trying hard to get into it, using many different methods of getting into that system, getting information about it, whereas the other one was using one particular type of attack, but using it over a wide range of systems. These two things overlap in a certain area, but it's possible to differentiate the two, one from the other. So, in order to develop these behavioral models, we use some automated tools, some data mining things. There's a couple other groups that are working on this. I'm not sure of the current state of some of these things, but I know Wenke Lee down in North Carolina working on a system, MatomID, that is a automated like behavioral model generation system. I just realized I got a little confused by my own slide and was jumping to something different. Really what I was trying to say here was actually that when someone uses automated tools to attack a system, that it's much easier to build a behavioral model for that. One of the first areas we started in was designing models for worms, because a worm is basically, it's a script kitty without the kitty. You know, it's kind of the ultimate little automated script kitty. So it's very easy to know what the worm's going to do, how it's going to behave, and recognize this behavior in the future. A colleague of mine that works at ISTS, Bill Stearns, he recently, when we had the lion and ramen and all of that stuff going on, he was one of the ones working on the tools to go in and clean up the systems and try and figure out if these things were there and then patch it. And every time, you know, it's the usual process. Every time he would write one of these tools, he would put it out there and someone would modify the worm so it acted a bit differently. So while using this particular, the system that we're developing here doesn't help you like actually go in and clean out, because it can't know things at that low level of detail. It's easy to build a model that would detect and recognize the presence of all the different types of worms and make it much harder for someone to modify the worm in such a way that it avoided detection. You still have the problem, of course, of going in and having to clean it up. Manual attacks, where you've got somebody just sat down behind their computer deciding what they're going to do at every stage, not doing anything automatically, is, of course, much more harder to predict. The particular approach we're using towards this is a game theory approach, where we treat it like a game between the attacker and the security system, and assuming that the attacker moves with intent and moves rationally, figure out what's most likely, what the course of action they're most likely going to take to maximize their gain and minimize their risk. Attack versus security systems. Both sides have imperfect knowledge. They don't know exactly what the other side is doing. They can repeat the attempts, and they gain knowledge as the game goes on. Without getting too much more into the game theory, because that's right now it's not that developed and it's not all that interesting at this stage. That's about the end of my presentation on the distributed intrusion detection stuff. I was just going to put in a few plugs for some of the guys I work with their research. The quantitative security risk assessment. This is kind of a formalization of methods to analyze the security risks on your network and determine where you can best spend your money to improve it, get the most bang for your buck. You know, especially if you have limited resources, monetary or otherwise, human resources, whatever. And the other area of interest in this is in insurance for networks. As far as I know, and this isn't my work, so I'm not the one to know, currently Lloyd's of London has actually started providing insurance policies for networks against attacks. And so far they're the only insurance company to be doing this. So they know what they're doing, so they must be using methods similar to this. The forensic tool development is another big thing going on there. That just a couple examples of what they're doing is one is doing digital camera identification. This is built on a tool called EnCase that's used by law enforcement to analyze files that are found on a computer that's taken as evidence in a particular case. And amazingly, when you take pictures with digital cameras, that every different camera puts in different sort of metadata into the file that it creates and can actually, depending on the particular type brand of camera and that, you know, it can actually tie it right back to a particular camera with a particular serial number. And this is being used now. This is actually starting to be used now. One of our first like products actually in use by various local law enforcement agencies in the pursuit of child porn cases, to where if they find the images on a computer, and then they can also tie that to a camera that is owned by that person, that they know they've got a stronger case against them. Also, they're working on data recovery tools that do reconstruction of partially deleted files, where you've lost part of your file, and it tries to recreate either the JPEG or the document from it, whatever type of file it is. Like I said, other projects, the semantic hacking, internet health monitoring, large-scale network simulation, that's not in the group that I'm working in, but in the group upstairs, they're doing simulations of computer networks consisting of on the order of tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands of computer nodes in the simulation. Not computer nodes being used to run the simulation, but computers in the simulated network. And the security informant and the user mode Linux HoneyNet project. Basically, information about all of that stuff, if anybody's interested, can be found at the website, ists.dartmouth.edu. The group I work for is the IRIA group. It's off that website, too, and that's my email address if anybody's interested. So that's about it for my presentation. If anybody has any questions... the question was, how much time do we have invested in the database? Not a whole lot. It's been right now, and this is why it's just our own little internal thing right now. This is kind of quick and dirty, and we've got a good model behind it as far as it being extensible, but it's it's a lot of manual work to get things in and out of it right now. But it's good for our purposes. Out of curiosity, why were you asking? Any particular? Oh, okay. When's your talk? Okay. Yeah, I'd love to hear that. The question was based on how long it takes to do these computations. How long should we keep forensic evidence available? It's a hard question to answer because it depends on a lot of factors. One, on the type of attack. You know, some attacks are very spread out. Some are some take place over a short amount of time. What we're hoping to do is actually model this based on different types of attacks, different types of things you're looking for, to come out with some sort of chart of how long you need to keep stuff. Most things we're looking at are actually fairly short time scale, like along a week to a few weeks. Beyond that, it gets very expensive to maintain the storage systems. Yes. I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear that. Oh, the question was how far behind do I think that commercial data IDS vendors and such and ISPs are behind providing a product like this? I think the biggest challenge to getting the to getting something like this out there is actually more political than anything else, in that getting people to share the information. People aren't really that willing to do this right now, and we're working with various government agencies where they can be, you know, ordered to do so. So this is a ways off. We're not expecting anything coming on this for a number of years, probably. I get on the left, or. The question was, are we using any particular methods for either winnowing the data, looking at it in different sort of segments at a time? And yes, this is actually one of the big areas of research, is trying to figure out, and we haven't done so much in this, but it's one of the things we know we need to work on, is looking at combining the information in different sort of segments over time. One thing we've been doing is relaxing time constraints to look at things and say, like, all of these things are kind of, they're close enough together. We'll just throw this as a chunk, because you get down to a certain quanta in time, and it doesn't make any sense anyways, because you can't correlate it between systems that much. So that is important. The question was for the three of us, or three of you, who I'm only seeing one so far that's interested in the formulas. Will that be available online? And yes, I will put that up online. It'll be on the it'll probably be a little while, maybe a couple weeks before I get around. I'm not going to be home for another week and a half, so. I will make it available online. It'll be on the ISTS website off the IRIA. Both the presentation, and some other papers we have on it. The question was, specify the amount of data to keep based on time, and what does that look like based on the number of alerts on the IDS? To tell you the truth, I'm not really sure. I mean, you know, it depends on how much is your network getting attacked. On our network, on the networks that we've been working on so far, we're talking usually on the order of over like a week period, a couple week periods, over the large amounts of networks. We've been looking on the orders of tens of thousands, but that's cumulative over the size of networks that we're working on. That's what we've been dealing with. That number will of course go up as it gets more widespread, larger networks, and it's going to be an interesting task to see where the balancing point is between how much information you need to be able to accurately track things, and when do you get to the point where you get overwhelmed. Well, if that's about it, I guess the next thing for me to do is let you know that I believe it's Ian Goldberg is speaking in here next on arranging anonymous rendezvous, and then Jay Beal a bit later on about Bastille Linux. So thank you all.